Hello and welcome along to another RTÉ Rugby podcast. Week one of the BKT United Rugby Championship is in the books and the season has caught fire straight away. Six games over the weekend decided by a total of 12 points, 5 points being the biggest winning margin of the weekend. And with me to talk through it all are Bernard Jackman and Johnny Murphy. Later on in the podcast, I'll be joined by Hannah O'Connor to look ahead to Ireland's WXV campaign. That gets underway in the early hours of Monday morning coming, Ireland taking on New Zealand in Vancouver. Hannah will also touch as well on her decision to retire after the recent Interpro campaign. First up, guys, Bernard, how are you? You had a busy weekend. You were up in
Oma Academicals, and they were celebrating a last gasp win over Clonmel. They had a kick late in the game. It seemed to be all over the leagues, even in the junior league. I watched Wicklow get a last minute try to beat Bective, and there were so many close, exciting games. They were celebrating that. It was their annual dinner. It's the earliest annual dinner, I think, in Ulster. It was great. All the players, first, seconds, thirds, under 20s, the women's team, were all there at it. Whereas sometimes in some of the Leinster clubs, you only get a club captain, and it's very much an older crowd. So I thought that mix was brilliant and good fun. I had never been to Oma Academicals before, but they've got brilliant facilities, and Ulster club rugby seems to be really booming, which is positive. And obviously, we're going to talk about Ulster senior team obviously getting off to a flyer, but it was all doom and gloom there, for the last couple of years. But the worm seems to have turned a bit.
Absolutely. And Johnny, you've Ulster opposition this weekend in Queens with your Nay side. Close one as well down in Highfield for you at the weekend to start the season.
Yeah, one that we probably it's the first time we've got a point down there since we played against them over the last number of years. So but we were 12 points up at half time, felt we could have closed the game out. But they're a big, strong physical side and they're going to be there, thereabouts. So it's not a bad kind of marker for us early season as we kind of, our younger guys kind of get acclimatized to the AIL. We've got a couple of lads straight out of school playing and stuff. So in that Irish 20s mix. So hopefully we can be, our league is a bit mad. So if we can be kind of fourth, fifth or sixth going into kind of closing rounds, be it, game two or three, you could end up finishing second. So, it's just to stay in the hunt as much as we can. But looking at the AIL, as Bert said, Mary's first time up in 1A, there was a real tight game with Tarf, and then obviously Lansdowne and Gary Owens. So there's plenty of really tight finishes across the whole weekend.
Yeah, and across the URC then as well, and we'll fire into that. To start with, Birch, just what an opening weekend. Before we even get into specifics of, individuals or performances or anything like that, when you think about how in the week leading up to it, there'd been all this talk about, rumours around the British and Irish League and stuff like that. Geez, the URC organisers couldn't have asked for anything better than that. Six games decided by a maximum of 12 points.
Yeah, they couldn't, and even in Wales, which is probably the country that are most enthused by something other than the URC. I watched the Dragons against the Ospreys. It was a really good Welsh derby. Dragons won it late in the game. Cardiff, who I think could be the best Welsh team this year, weren't overly convincing against Eber, but still scored some really nice tries and played some really good attacking rugby. There was a good crowd there. So, yeah, it was, if the URC do need some quality games early just to quell that negative chat or chat of a disruption, they certainly got it. And obviously in Ireland, that derby down in Limerick was, and to be fair, the Ulster Glasgow game was very exciting as well. We got off to a cracker. And fitness levels of teams, first game of the season and for their technique and their ability to play with intensity late in the game, I thought was really impressive as well. So hats off to everyone involved in getting players ready physically to go from round one.
Yeah, and I think, Johnny, what added to it was since it was such an early season, first round of the season games, there were a lot of mistakes, but they were mistakes that kind of contributed to the overall spectacle rather than making it a poor game.
Yeah, I think there were mistakes that probably led to, you know, they were, you know, they were probably more execution than effort, but they led to kind of a much more open game, you know, kind of more open game. But also it was kind of the, you know, the enthusiasm to play is kind of leading, you know, across all provinces from what I saw over the weekend, that there is an enthusiasm to play a bit more, you know, in round one and actually have a go, which obviously there are a couple of teams getting acclimatized to in terms of new systems, new coaches, that kind of stuff. But in general, there seems to be a much more of a, you know, a will and a want to kind of play, you know, kind of Connacht have, obviously they've layered on what they did last year. They hit the ground running under Mark Sexton. This year you can see another kind of early doors, a bit of an extra layer in terms of their, you know, I've written it down, you know, in terms of their multiple lines of attack, you know, and real late changes of movement in those front and back lines kind of in the pass, you know, when the pass is made. You look at the try where Hansen comes around the corner and they offload into that space, and yeah, it's good. I'm looking forward to see where it's going to evolve to.
Yeah, and Pete Wilkins had some interesting stuff to say about that as well, I'll get to a little bit later on. We'll start chronologically though, since Leinster were first up on Friday away to Edinburgh. That's where we'll start this week. 33-31 win away to Edinburgh, and Bernard, like, a pretty sticky game. Edinburgh had a strong team out there. It was a bit of a wet and greasy night at the Hive. Leinster had a mix of youth and some frontline internationals out there as well. Got the bonus point win though, even if it wasn't all perfect.
Yeah, well, it wasn't, but I think that's probably where we, I think that was a disappointing thing last year, is that Leinster's mixed team wasn't able to necessarily go and get results, which probably under Lancaster, they had been, you know, for 3 or 4 years there was never really any doubt they were going to finish top of the regular season. And last year there was a little bit of a slip off, and obviously, you know, the World Cup, you know, drained players, etc. And there's reasons for that, but that was a mixed team, as you said. Probably, to be honest, there's probably more quality in it and experience in it than Leinster traditionally can play round one. But then there was probably younger players alongside those, so it probably evened out. And I thought they were quite comfortable. I mean, Edinburgh get a try at the death, you know, to get a bonus point, or get 2 bonus points, and make the game look a little bit more nerve-wracking for Leinster than it probably was. I thought Leinster's ability to score when they were in good areas of the field was impressive, and they scored quite easily, and their attack, despite lots of combinations that haven't played a lot together, was actually quite fluid as well, and they were able to open up Edinburgh pretty easily. I would have worries about Edinburgh. I don't think, you know, they were pretty average last year. On paper, they're a good side in terms of individuals, and there's lots of experience in there. But and they're saying all the right things around what they fixed over preseason. But I think it's going to be Glasgow very much leading the way from a Scottish regional point of view. And Edinburgh, I don't think they're going to be a playoff team. But for Leinster to get that 5 points, and for some of those youngsters, and you know, I thought Sam Prendergast looked very composed as always. But I thought Charlie Tector, he really caught the eye, because he brought a level of physicality to that 12 jersey that, you know, you wouldn't normally expect of a 10. He's had a tough time with injury. Struggled for game time because of those injuries, struggled for game time because of the quality of the other people in those rotations, Harry, Ross, Sam, and obviously Frawley at the odd time. And probably needed to have a big game to get more game time, and he certainly did. So I thought overall Leinster would be delighted with that. Obviously they lost first round last year to get 5 points at home, away from home, and now they have the Dragons Friday night, which will be another 5 points, and you know, they'll be off and running.
Let's stay on Charlie Tector, Johnny, because I think he was the player that most people were actually talking about after the game as well. And over the last year or so, people have probably wondered where he'd gone, because caught up in this long out half queue, and all of a sudden everyone's talking about Sam Prendergast, and people were forgetting about, you know, this out half who helped win a Grand Slam for the Ireland under 20s a couple of years ago and was playing here and there little games for Leinster. But seeing him in the centre last weekend, I think one of the things Bernard said specifically as well, f- physically, he really, really looked up for it.
Yeah, I think, look, I know, having played against Charlie at schools level in terms of Kilkenny College, I've seen him come up through the ranks over the last number of years. Personally, I always felt that his position would be 12. He was kind of that 10 and a half position, and kind of got caught. He's a year older than Sam. And I just felt that, you know, an extended period where he could play 12 and be that, I suppose, he has the ability to be that kind of Kiwi style second 5'8". And he also has that ability from a physical standpoint and that footballing ability you can see from his try, you know, to be able to go up and grab that ball and then finish it the way he did. You know, I think he has an opportunity to really progress in that 12 slot and be someone that can also play ball as a, you know, as a second receiver, but also carry, but also his kicking game, given his experience at 10 as, you know, playing all his underage rugby there. So it was great to see. And I think, you know, you see probably, you know, what he's thought of within the group when Jack Conan name checks him a number of times after in his post-match interview around, you know, it's been a long couple of months for him, and, you know, how delighted the whole group is for him. So he's obviously someone that's really well, highly regarded within the group. So it's great to see. And it's another person within that pipeline that's coming through, and hopefully he can really kick forward now with a clean bill of health.
And Bernard, like, he obviously took his try very, very well, but I suppose the gates opened up for him after he fielded that high ball. But, like, you look at Jordan Larmour's try early in the second half, where that space just gets generated from Tector really just hammering a really, really tight line back in towards the post. And I suppose those are the little things a coach will be looking out for. And look, you make your own luck in this game, and, you know, he put in that good performance on Friday night. He got another little bit of luck elsewhere with someone else picking up an injury. Well, I suppose it's his own teammate, Tommy O'Brien, picking up an injury. And all of a sudden now, he's in a shop window of an emerging Ireland tour.
Yeah, look, I think he always would have been someone that they were looking at for as an emerging Ireland possibility. And for sure, it's his lack of game time and those injuries. But now he's got a chance. That's how quickly things can change. And it's like, you know, there's been lots of examples of just taking your opportunity and Frawley's probably
greatest,
someone else.
Sorry, the greatest example is Hugo Keenan back in 2020. Now, I'm not saying Charlie Tector is going to be playing in the Six Nations in a few months, but, you know,
no, 100%.
A door open, you go through it.
No, 100%. And what the biggest difference is, there's very little difference between most of those players physically, skill set wise. It's the mentality. And I know that Farrell is absolutely huge on that. Do they have the mentality to handle pressure? And, you know, Jack Crowley, when he came in training with Ireland first, they believed he did. You know, I think they believe Frawley does, and I think evidence has shown that he probably does have that big game mentality. And well, look, Friday night wasn't a massive match. There was a lot of pressure on Tector. There was a lot of pressure on him because, you know, it's very easy to get carried away or get caught up in the negatives of what happens if I don't play well here, and where's my future, and like, he will have seen the market has changed. He will have seen some players in the Leinster dressing room struggle to get, you know, contracts elsewhere or end up in the MLR or whatever. So you know, where they may have previously thought to get to the Premiership or the top 14. So the market has changed. So for youngsters now, when you do get that chance, you have to take it. And he can take huge confidence in what he's done. Now he's going to go down to South Africa. It's a different environment. It'll be brilliant for him. And hopefully come back and continue to get little opportunities for Leinster and show how good he is. But I will see him in school level as well. There's never been a doubt that he's talented. Competition around you really have to take your opportunities. And Friday night was a big step forward for him.
On the other side of the coin then, Johnny, you've got someone like Tommy O'Brien who just can't catch a break. Every time he looks like he's coming into form, and it's just another little injury that's popping up. He scores his try on Friday night. He was getting his opportunity with Emerging Ireland, and as he's scoring it, the hamstring goes.
Yeah, it's really frustrating. I really like Tommy O'Brien as a player. I think his his power and speed, his finishing ability, he and his work rate off the ball is excellent. And you know, yeah, but like, look, that's unfortunately that's professional sport. He has to get right. He'll have to get back. He will get opportunities coming into, you know, if we can get that hamstring correct, we're coming into a period where there's going to be, you know, games, you know, around the autumn series and then into Christmas and stuff. So just needs to try and get himself fully right and take that opportunity. Hopefully he gets a second one as he, but he is, you know, if you're on that radar, that emerging Ireland radar, they're not just going to get rid of you off that. You know, he's someone that is tagged and on that pathway, so he needs a bit of injury, you know, a bit of injury free time, and put a collection of and remember, we're in a Lions year, so everyone in those positions, there's going to be opportunities on the summer tour next year where the top, you know, maybe I don't know, anything from 6 to 12 players maybe might be going on Alliance, you know, so...
And then that opens a gap in an Ireland squad touring what we think is exactly Georgia in the summer.
Yeah, exactly. So you have to be able to stay, put a string of games together. And this year in particular, I know when I was playing, you always targeted to be fit for a really good chunk of this season, given it's a Lions year, and really impress throughout the autumn series, Six Nations, and then if you can put yourself in a bench spot for a province going into you know, a playoff spot, you're going to be in the shop window for the international coaches, given there's so many guys away and guys who might have injuries. There could be 15, 16 frontliners missing a summer tour this year.
Mm-hmm. And Bernard, final point on Leinster then. And I'm fairly stating the obvious in this one, but Jameson Gibson-Park's hamstrings have held up well over the summer.
Yeah, absolutely. With the new shaved head, he looks like a new man. Looks bigger physically, but which obviously I don't know if he would, if he actually is. But certainly that injection of pace for his try was a key moment. And like, how good is it for Leinster to be able to? How good is it for Sam Prendergast to be able to play with him? You know what I mean? He is one of the best scrum halves in the world, and it is absolutely key to how Leinster want to play. But for those youngsters, I thought the way Leo picked the team, and the combinations of experience and young talent was a really nice way for him to go away from home and have support around him, and it worked out really well for them.
Yeah, Johnny, those games, I suppose, can often be overlooked. But when you, as Bernard says, like when you have the combinations where you have young players getting an opportunity to just partner up with a very, very experienced guy, like Conor O'Tiernan and James Ryan in the second row being another example, they're very, very good development tools.
Yeah, and I think you look at, you know, each unit within, you know, being on the bench, they all had serious level of experience. You know, James Ryan, Jack Conan, Gibson Park, Ringrose, Jamie Osborne in the backfield. You know, I know he's newly capped, but he has that, you know, South Africa experience underneath his belt. So yeah, it was a really good just a good opportunity for, you know, guys like McCarthy and all those guys to, you know, to get going. And then you have obviously the likes of, you know, Keane Healy and, you know, Somani coming off the bench, you know, like I'm big up to Keane Healy. Like, Birch and I both played with him. You know, he's still going. Birch played with him before I did, just to clarify that. It's incredible, his career and what he's given to Leinster.
Yeah.
And Ireland.
Yeah, and I may as well follow up on that then as well, Bernard. I mean, all things going to plan, he equaled Devin Turner's record last weekend. I would assume he's going to pass it at the Aviva Stadium this Friday night against the Dragons. 280 caps. Throw in the 130 odd games he's played for Ireland, you're up above 410 games of professional rugby, of top level professional rugby.
Yeah, and if you like, to be honest, if you had asked me when he broke into the team first in 2008-2009, would he have a long career? I would have said no chance. Like he didn't look after himself that well early doors, but afterwards, obviously, to get to that level, obviously genetics play a huge part in it, but he also became a really diligent professional in terms of his rehab and prehab. Now, look, I'm not saying he had a bad diet or was a big boozer and that, but he used to go. There's a skateboarding ramp in Coolock, and he used to go like doing. I think skateboarding. And he had this one. He bought his custom-made BMX, and he was doing these like turnpikes and flips and everything. Which, for a young prop who had bad ankles, wasn't probably the most logical thing to do. But the great thing about, I think part of the reason he's been able to go on this part of his professionalism is I think mindful. You know what I mean? He about the game. He does his job. Incredibly well, he knows his detail, and then he's able to switch off. You know what I mean? And I think that's something that for players, it's the mental wear and tear that can finish people's careers. But Keane's had that balance right for a long time. So fair play to him. Like to pass out Dev, and when you look at the fact that very few of those legendary Leinster players ever left Leinster. You know, Leo and Jennings are probably the only two who went away for a while. The rest pretty much stayed. To be the most capped player for Leinster is a serious achievement.
Certainly is. And I presume if he doesn't do it this week, he'll be doing it next week, or he'll be doing it sometime very, very soon. We'll move on from Leinster. Munster and Connacht served up the game of the weekend at Thomond Park. As good as Leinster and Edinburgh was on Friday night, this was even better. 10 tries, Johnny. Connacht led four times. They scored five tries and 33 points, and someone came on the wrong side of it. I reckon had you told Pete Wilkins before the game you're going to score five tries and 33 points at Thomond Park, he probably would have taken that pre-match.
Yeah, I think, it was an unbelievable game to watch. Ebb and flowed the whole way through right up until the end. But yeah, as I spoke about earlier on, I think the Connacht attack has kind of layered on again, you know, throughout this pre-season. You know, under Mark, I'm really looking forward to where it can progress. You look at the try for Ioane when they, you know, in the 22 where they come around the corner and Mac Hansen gets the ball away. And then Ioane kind of offloads the ball, and then they score. Jack Murphy scores. I think that, you know, that their lines of movement there in play in such a tight area of the park were incredible to watch, because their movement on the ball and off the ball, like when the ball is in air, is exceptional. And they completely, like, it's really, really hard, even if you're running a soft defence or a blitz defence, it's really hard to pick those players because the movement is just perfectly timed. And then I think what an introduction for, you know, by, you know, Jack Murphy in terms of, you know, his break off the scrum goes inside Casey. Yeah, I just think in general they're, you know, they, you look at on paper, you know, what they have, and you look at how they play, a bit like Ulster, they're, you know, the sum of their parts is definitely greater than the whole, but they're a brilliant team to watch.
And Birch, I was doing Connacht's media yesterday, and some of the quotes from Pete Wilkins made me fairly excited actually about like what's to come from Connacht this season. Look, they could win or lose a lot of games, but ultimately it's about like what you're seeing as a spectacle. And he was asked about giving the players like Mac Hansen, like Josh Ioane, the opportunity to kind of take the game by the scruff of the neck if they see it. And he said, it's about making sure we get the balance right between the flow and the shape of the team, but also making sure all of the players are empowered to see something and just go for it. You saw some lovely examples, particularly for Mac, in terms of just trusting his instinct and breaking out of team shape at the weekend, and it's getting good returns. From a coaching point of view, it's getting a balance, knowing that there's a team flow, that there's shape, but that within that framework, those guys have the license to pick off the moments and express themselves. And, you know, when you have players like Mac Hansen, Josh Ioane, Santiago Cordero on a back line, like there's so much scope and so much opportunity for what they can do if a game becomes a little bit fractured.
Yeah, I think so, Neil, I think it's one thing for Connor to get those players in the rosters, the Corderos, the Mac Hansons, etc. But then it's actually, you know, having the bravery to select someone like Ben Murphy. So Ben Murphy didn't get a huge amount of opportunities in Leinster, or when he did get to play, that probably it was probably in a fractured part of the season where, you know, Leinster are putting together a team as such, and they probably don't get a huge amount of time to train together, or he didn't get a huge amount of reps. Whereas obviously in preseason, he's probably been in and out of that starting rotation quite a bit. He's blown them away. I mean, you know, the chat after mirrors what I've been hearing during August, you know, that this fella has come down here and is laid down a marker. Incredibly fit, very good pass. But that ability then to draw on defenders like we saw for that Ione break, I mean, just scooting out Ione, again, how many tens will run that line? I mean, that's a line you expect a centre to run. And then obviously once he gets through that first line, like all good Kiwis, particularly an All Black, even though it's only one cap, you know, he has the composure and skill set to draw and give. So that was really positive for them. And as I said, Wilkins, I think at his core, he's kind of Connacht's way forward, or Connacht's DNA will always have to be, you know, play with speed, be a little bit unpredictable, but what you need is those structures and systems in place to give you those opportunities. And I think we saw a really good balance of those. They'll be gutted not to have got the win, but certainly going back up the road to Galway with 2 points and like elements of their performance will have got them very excited about what's ahead of them. And it was needed because, as I said, they end of the season on a bit of a downer. Some big name players were leaving. It's probably working under a smaller budget. Ione coming in, and obviously it was unfortunate JJ got injured. But that could be a real boost for them. You know, he is a different type of 10 than JJ and Jack Carty. And I think we saw a lot the other night. I know he'd be gutted with that kick to touch, but at least he was pushing and trying to get his pack, you know, 5 meters out, yeah, to Haley knocked in. So very, very positive start for Connacht. And Munster, to be fair, like without playing well, they showed the character they needed. Sorry, they played well in patches, but without being dominant, it's an ideal start for them in terms of the result.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, go ahead, Johnny.
Yeah, no, just on the thing you mentioned, Wilkes, what he was saying about, you know, the players kind of taking the opportunity. Bert set up a kind of group call, or there was a call seminar with Andy Friend early in the week. And there was just something interesting about Andy Friend that he said that was actually led by Pete while he was there. And that was the one he was asked, did he want to extend for 5 years? And he's telling this story on the call. And he said, you know, he went back in on the Monday and he said, what my legacy here will be. And it's led by one of the big things that Pete wants, is that allowing players be themselves. And I think obviously, you know, having heard that, and then in the same week, what you just said, what said yesterday, and it's clear that the environment is a place where players, regardless of, you know, where they're from, who they are, what they like, that they're allowed to be themselves within that. And they play obviously within that framework that allows them to take that. So it's just a clear kind of, you know, an environment or a culture or whatever you want to call it. Different people have different words that, you know, they are actually living that off the pitch, and then on the pitch, they're bringing that through as well. It's just something that, you know, when you put the two together, it's obviously a really cool environment to be in.
Yeah, it's good to see. It's not just words at a press conference. There's obviously some proper meaning behind it with the team. The important thing, obviously, for them now, Connacht, Bernard, is like they put in a good performance. They got 2 points out of the game, in fairness, which could be two valuable points at the end of the season. But they had a habit last season of putting in really, really big performances in interpros, and sometimes not getting the result, but putting in big performances in interpros and finding that emotional pitch, but falling flat the following week. And they're bringing a Sharks team to Galway this weekend who didn't have a good URC season last year, but won the Challenge Cup, are fully up to game speed through the Currie Cup, which they won last weekend as well, and also have added a lot of power over the last few months as well. Like, you look at the squad they're bringing over. Granted, they're missing Springboks, who are away in the Rugby Championship at the moment, but Trevor Enyakanya's there, Ntutu Mchunu's there, Jason Jenkins, Andre Esterhazen, the Chichuka brothers, Ethan Hooker is in there. Like, that's a strong travelling squad that they're bringing over to Galway.
Yeah, look, on paper last year, they were probably, and in terms of what happened on the pitch, they were the most disappointing team. I mean, it didn't make sense how poor they were given the roster they had. They've gone again, and they've gone very strong in terms of their ambition. Obviously, they're probably the most well-supported financially South African franchise. But I think the key thing here is that Currie Cup win. I don't know if you saw like a 58 meter penalty to win it, and the bounce they can get from that winning feeling. I mean, I thought last year they just got into a rut where they just couldn't get confidence or self belief. So the Currie Cup, you know, it's not the same competition it was in the past, but it's still very a huge part of history, a very historic trophy and competition, and I think they will get a bounce of that. So this game is a challenge for Connacht. They will have seen elements of Connacht's defence that they believe they can expose. They obviously they're a more powerful team than Munster. They won't be as well drilled as Munster, but they'll be more powerful, and that's always been something that Connacht have struggled with. I think for Connacht, that consistency, I think it has to be a huge focus for them. And obviously, you know, the sports ground is going to be different with the Clan Terrace, you know, out of action and how that affects the home performance or the away performance is going to be interesting. But I think this is a big test. If Wilkins can get a win and another positive performance, they can really kick on. Whereas a loss to the Sharks will kind of put everything back in question again. So it's really important that they go. I thought someone who actually could be a big part of that consistency is Josh Murphy.
I meant to bring him up.
Yeah. Just, you know, I loved how he had to take a gap year for his medical studies. And if it meant he had to give up rugby, he would have obviously, you know, went the medical route because he's obviously put a lot of time into that and he's very passionate about it. So it needed a little bit of creativity and trust from Connacht to give him a 3-year contract where he did 1 year, missed a year, and then came back. I mean, that's not easy to get across a board level, you know what I mean?
That goes back to what we were talking about a couple of minutes ago.
100%.
Letting the players be themselves.
100%. And again, you could say, oh, well, look, it's going to take him a little bit while to get up to speed and get back. You know, he had a year last year playing Energia League and blah blah blah, but he came back. He was awesome. That was one of his best performances.
Yeah,
you know, if you remember the year before he went to Connacht, early in that year he was pulling up trees for Leinster and he was very much in the mix for the big European games, and probably him not getting the nod for a couple of those probably led to him looking elsewhere. But I just thought he's someone who brings it every week. Sometimes he steps over the line, but where Connacht are at the moment and they want to be more consistent, having someone with his drive and emotional investment could be others feed off that. So I thought he was a big positive as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he's someone that can really back up Keane Prendergast in that. Like Keane is, he's one of those people that exactly like Keane that just rocks up regardless where they are, who they're playing for, they rock up every single week. And I think the pair of them in the back row will work really, really well together. Like it's a fairly balanced back row. You look at the one that started with, you know, they've an out and out seven and Oliver, you know, and then Prendergast and Murphy. But yeah, I would 100% agree with Birch. I thought he was awesome last weekend.
Yeah, certainly was. I'm conscious we've barely mentioned Munster in all of this. We did mention the character to kind of dig it out. One thing I did want to touch on as well, though, Birch, was I think one of the things that stood out from a positive on Saturday was a really nice looking connection between Tom Farrell and Alex Nankivell already developing in the centre.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Nankivell's probably fairly easy to play outside because he's super consistent and he's so direct and Frisch and him have built a good relationship. But I think Farrell has a lot of ability. Farrell has a lot of ability. And the only thing that's held him back really has been injuries and maybe not also having the front football that he's probably going to get more with Munster. So this could be a big move for him. Obviously, he had a bit of a fright where, he needed to go to the markets and it was a tough time to go to the market. Obviously, Frisch leaving opened up an opportunity to go to Munster, and as a partnership they really look good. And yeah, I think Munster found a Munster. That was a good recruit. Obviously, people talk about Abrahams and Billy Burns. They were the higher profile and the ones that got the most column inches. But I think Farrell could really blossom there. And as you said, that partnership with Nankerville straight up just looked very comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, he could be a bit of a money ball signing, to be honest, in terms of, you know, where he fits in within that, you know, their back three. Obviously, Haley's hitting a bit of form and has towards the end of last year as well. He's back to where he was when he got capped. And I think that, you know, he can fit into that system really, really well.
And then in a weekend where there were a lot of young players across the board popping up with big moments, let's talk about Tony Butler coming on. Billy Burns gets his injury. Doesn't look like it's going to be too serious now. He's still not ruled out of this weekend. But if he is unavailable, Tony Butler is likely to be getting the start against Zebra away this weekend. But to come on in those last 20 minutes, Johnny, and there was, like I think Graham Rowntree said as well, there's still stuff to work on. There was a tackle that slipped off there in the lead up to one of the tries. But for a young out half to step up over two really, really high pressure conversions, particularly the second one just a few yards in off the touchline, to go ahead with 10 minutes to go, absolutely held his nerve and sank them.
Yeah, it was. It was really, and he didn't shy away from anything in terms of when he got on, like they're in a position that they had to go win the game. You know, I think Coombs's try is kind of Munster in full flow work, you know, in terms of the ability to move the ball to space and the power and the offloading, they get in behind, and then, you know, someone like Coombs is just so hard to stop. But to knock, you know, to knock those two kicks over shows a lot of bottle for a young player, and it's great to see. And I think they closed the game out well. You know, there was still a fairly significant amount of time there where they had to get to that final whistle. So yeah, it was good. And like anything, you know, someone like that, yeah, you know, you're going to fall off tackles, you're going to have to get acclimatized to the speed and the, I suppose, the pressure at home of what was a fairly high tempo, well, very high tempo game. So but yeah, I think the confidence that he can get and also build up his mentality from a kicking perspective is huge.
It's funny you mentioned Gavin Coombs' try there. I'd advise anyone to go back and watch the match and look at the one of the replays of Gavin Coombs' try, where you can see him charging down on Santiago Cordero. And I have never seen a player, you can see the moment in his eyes where he's questioning all of his life's choices. He's about 3 yards away from the line with Gavin Coombs bearing down on him. he was never going to stop him. Listen, we are running out of time. We do want to get to Ulster though. And what a way to cap off the weekend. A brilliant weekend of games. An 85th minute try against the defending champions for Ulster to snatch the win. And of all people as well, Dave Shanahan, someone, Bernard, who's been there through thick and thin with Ulster down the years and probably hasn't really had his moment down the years. But what a moment. Not just for the try, but changed the game when he came on in the second half.
Yeah, the try is one thing. And obviously, once he gambles there and goes for it, you've got to be so accurate, because that's the game. So and a lot of players shy away from that, and they just take a couple of meters back and let a forward take it on. So credit to him for that. But I thought absolutely his organization and his composure in the lead up to that was excellent. Like it was if Cooney or Doak did it, you'd be praising them, you know. But for a fella who he actually is, you know, experience in terms of the years he's been a pro, probably the amount of caps he has, but just not really, as you say, having that moment. And I thought he was excellent. I also thought, that Ulster pack looked muscular and aggressive and physical. And the way, you know, he it was Harry Sheridan and Tom O'Toole and Izuchukwu came off the bench, it gave them that capacity to have that power game late in the game rather than early. And it worked out well. Look at all Richie, you know, obviously they will have worked on a lot of different things over the off season. I listened to Aidan Morgan talking about the new 10, about Richie trying to, you know, teach him the how to control a game, but letting him be that natural attacking 10 that he probably has been a core of what he's got him to Super Rugby level. But I think, yeah, it didn't fall into place as easily as Connacht's attack or Munster's, for, and also you're up against a good opponent. But yeah, the spirit, the grit, The feel good factor, like players in the stands afterwards getting selfies with, you know, with fans, their families. Ravenhill can be special. It had lost that, and I think beating the champions first up in 83rd or 4th minute, when you haven't played well, is a massive boost to actually making that place special again. And once they get the home stuff right and get that place bouncing and get the team confidence, they're good enough to go and start winning more often away from home than they did last year. And he'd be absolutely delighted. He'd be chuffed. He would have been delighted watching Ben play. But then his own job and his own team, I think they'll get a huge amount of that, because you're not going to be a top team unless you have that ability to come back from the dead and have that fight, and they show that.
I think just on that, I think you look at even little things like their social media, you know, the noise coming from Ravenhill, the belief. I don't think they would have won that game last year, particularly under the older management in terms of where they were as a collective. But like, you know, there's smiles all over their social media, individual social media, which wasn't there last year. Like Stockdale nearly gets in a row with, you know, Stevie Ferris around, you know, what's going on, what he's done, what's happening, you know, behind the scenes. So I just think it just in terms of what they've done, regardless of on the pitch, it seems to be a much, much happier place off pitch, which leads them, you know, when you're in it and you feel connected to people, it's like, right, well, I'm going to grind this out, you know, and you do it together. And I thought it was, and like little things like Morgan, you're talking about, you know, for his try, his work right there to get to the, to block down the ball, to then get up, chase it, and then organize two or three phases and then go over himself. Like, that doesn't really acquire a whole lot of talent. It just creates, I'm actually just work rate, I'm going to do this for the group. Mm. I think there's a lot to be positive there. And hopefully they can build on that, because, you know, we need Ulster firing from an Irish perspective. And, you know, Ravenhill is a special place to play rugby, and it's a tough place to win. And hopefully they can build that fortress back up.
Absolutely. And I suppose even when you just look through the list of fixtures, that win jumps out as being massive even in and of itself, because they're on a plane to South Africa this week, Lions and Bulls over there. And if they had been heading down to South Africa off the back of a defeat to start off, all of a sudden the start of the season is looking really, really tough. So a vital win for them. I do want to finish up, guys, just to mention as well, obviously on Monday evening, Marty Moore confirmed his retirement from rugby. 10 Ireland caps, could have been even more. You look back at 2022 when he was probably playing the best rugby of his career and had got into that Ireland A squad in November, and all of a sudden does his ACL in January. And he's obviously had a tough time coming back for it. Got some games in last season, but he's made the decision to retire. He says to prioritise on his mental well-being. It's tough to see a player like that, Bernard, retire. But you'd have to wish him all the best in the future, and he's got a hell of a career out of it.
Yeah, absolutely, and great fella. Obviously, went away to Wasp for a little while, came back to Ulster. Whenever he was fit and played, he was one of the best scrummagers, title props in Europe. Like that's how good he was technically. And then he had other elements to his game. He was quite a good jackal threat. He wasn't a massively explosive ball carrier, but you know he got you over the gain line. It's tough. He was in banging form in 2022. Like he's had ups and downs as well. I mean, you know, he was written off by many Irish kind of coaches and people in Irish rugby, but kept finding a way to stay relevant and to stay important. And it is it's disappointing to see someone like him having to retire, but when you see what he actually achieved, it's a hell of a lot. So he can look back with plenty of pride on what was a very, very successful career. And he's well liked, very well liked by anyone who's played with him as well, and well respected, which is important too.
Johnny, someone you encountered much down the years?
Yeah, cross paths a couple of times, nothing major. like I wouldn't know him that well, but you know, I think like that, you know, the ups and downs of his career, but he always kept kind of, you know, kind of trying to rejuvenate himself, you know, be his time in Watts and then coming back. And, you know, it's just, it's very hard and very difficult when you see someone like that, of that quality, to have kind of those knockbacks and injuries and opportunities. And we spoke about it at the start, where how important it is when you get an opportunity to take it. And, you know, 2022, that Ireland, that was a big opportunity for him, and he's unable to take it. So, yeah, but like, I think anyone that has 10 international careers and played for the clubs that he played and has, you know, has played for as long as he has, kind of been incredibly proud of what he's achieved. So congratulations, Marty, on a massive career.
Yeah, and best wishes in the future to Marty Moore after he confirmed his retirement. Listen, lads, thanks a million for all that today. It's been great. Johnny Murphy and Bernard Jackman. Next up, we'll be looking ahead to the WXV with Hannah O'Connor. Join us in a second. Now, I'm delighted to be joined in this part of the podcast by former Ireland and Leinster back row / second row Hannah O'Connor, who recently confirmed her retirement, a veteran of 21 international caps. And in a few minutes, we'll look ahead to Ireland's WXV campaign coming up. But first of all, Hannah, thanks a million for joining us. Congratulations on the retirement. Congratulations on another Interpro title. How have the last couple of weeks been now that you're no longer a provincial and international rugby player?
I know. Thanks for being here, Neil. Yeah, thanks for having me on, first of all, anyway. Yeah, it's been, I suppose, a whirlwind last few weeks in particular. I suppose being back to the day job of school, things have been 100 miles an hour anyway since September and since school kicked back. So that's been a nice, grounding anyway for me. But no, it's been great, as I said, to finish with Leinster on a high like I did, managing to win the Leinster Interpro title again with the girls was brilliant. It was a great way to finish it. Obviously, would have preferred to have been on the pitch myself, but injury decided that wasn't to be the way. But the girls played an absolute blinder, and it was a cracker of a game up in Kingspan against Munster, and I suppose a good advertisement for the game as well and the style of rugby that we were playing. So that was always very pleasing on the day. From an Irish point of view, then, yeah, look, I suppose if you told me, like, whatever, 10 years ago when I probably started playing rugby, around that time, that I would have gone on to play for Ireland 21 times, it would have bitten your hand off if you told me that it was a possibility. So it wasn't something, it was something I suppose that I had hoped would have a chance of happening, and for it to happen on 21 occasions. Yeah, it's something that I'm very proud of. It's a bit surreal still looking back at it at the moment. But yeah, no, something that I'm very proud of, and definitely will cherish the memories of everything that went on. So yeah, bittersweet, but have to kind of look at the upside and the positive bits that went with it though.
The statement yourself and Leinster put out after the Interpro final confirming you'd retired, like, it, one of the things you said in it was you knew earlier this year that this was going to be your last campaign. What was it that kind of forced that decision to you? And were there any stages along these last few months that you kind of thought, oh, do you know what, maybe I could push it out another year, or I could try get to a World Cup?
Yeah, I suppose I did know earlier this year, like probably during probably coming towards the end of Six Nations, that it was probably the right time for me in kind of many levels. I obviously had the disappointment of missing out on the WXV3s that the girls played in last, kind of this time last year, I suppose. And that would have been a big goal to try and get part of that squad, but it wasn't to be. And I was delighted then to make it back in to the Six Nations squad and to kind of push and kind of prove to myself that I was still able to, you know, mix it with the girls in there and be able to, you know, get my starting jersey against the French match. And then managed to get another cap playing against England. So I suppose it was a great, for a team perspective, how the competition went. But for me, I suppose it was a bit disappointing not to feature more, or kind of have more of an impact, I suppose, on the pitch as you'd like. Obviously, you still have to play a big role off the pitch and getting everybody else ready. But I suppose on pitch, I probably would have liked to have been able to contribute more, but it wasn't to be for me. So I think I probably knew around then that it's just probably harder and harder to juggle with work and the full-time aspect of most of the girls, which is great that it's going in that direction. Most of the girls now in there are full-time, whether it be within the centralised programme or whether it be kind of over in the UK as well. So it's kind of harder and harder to balance that outside of work stuff, even with work have been very, very good to me. So I think I kind of knew between the two that the time, you know, to enjoy my time with it there and I suppose Leinster going hand in hand, I would always have seen Leinster as, you know, a massive stepping stone and a huge part of my journey to get into a green jersey. So I think having made my mind up probably in terms of Ireland, the Leinster side of things, I said, you know what, I would love to finish it on a high and finish it with going back to back for those, and to manage to do that was great. I suppose just, yeah, I suppose the two coming hand in hand, and the time that they take up in your life, and that you give them the energy that you give them, you know, I give it 110% to both of them. So to be able to kind of have a bit of time back, I suppose, to focus a bit more on my day job, but I suppose my summers and my time to myself back a little bit is just probably a part to play in it as well. So there's a mixture of all those things combined, I think.
For the international part of it, was it pre or post Six Nations when you decided that would be the last campaign?
Oh, it was definitely post. Like, you wouldn't have made that. I don't think you could go into it at the start of a campaign saying that this. I don't think you could go in that way. It definitely wasn't in my mindset. Like, I would have loved to have played on for as long as I possibly could, but then kind of coming towards the end of it, it just, I suppose, didn't work out the way I wanted it to work out on a personal level, despite it being a brilliant campaign for the country and for the girls. It was fantastic, like the outcome that we got in birth qualification for WXV1 and with the World Cup as well. It was top notch. Like, you couldn't have asked for more. But I suppose, yeah, on a personal level, I felt that I could give all that I'd given to it, and probably time to step aside from that level when it. So yeah, that was kind of definitely after, no, not before.
Yeah, but I mean, like, with hindsight then, having made the decision, I know, like, your last Irish cap comes against England at Twickenham, you know, against the Red Roses. I know the result obviously was a very, yeah, very big defeat, but I mean, if you're talking about how to sign off an international career, you know, like, how often are Ireland going to, how often will Ireland have played England down the years at Twickenham? That was surely a great moment to be involved in. I know the result obviously was a tough one on the day.
Yeah, it was a class showpiece to be involved in. There's no doubt about that. Like, and just like to see the absolute hordes of people coming in to Twickenham on that day when the bus was coming in. I think most of the girls probably were a bit, you know, at that, the sheer mass of people that were entering the stadium as we were on the bus, which was just class. It was just something that you soak up and you'll remember for a long time. Like I said, the result definitely wasn't, we weren't there to just take part in the showpiece. We would have obviously hoped to have a better performance on the day, but it didn't quite go for us on the day, and they were red hot on that day. So we you know, took the defeat that day, unfortunately. But yeah, look, as things go, as a way to finish it off, playing in front of that many people, it is something. But I'll definitely always look at it, probably the worst side of it, to be honest, in terms of that match. It's definitely not one I want to remember in the memory of. Say,
yeah, well, then we'll go over to a more positive one. Well, I say bittersweet actually, obviously, yeah, the Interpro final, which you missed,
yeah,
but to be able to sign off with to be able to walk in with a pot into the changing room afterwards was obviously a lovely way to put a bow on things.
Yeah, it's class. I said, I've always enjoyed my interprovincial rugby. It's, I think, probably the window that it's played in. It's normally a summer window. So it's like literally the time as I associate with my summer holidays and being off work and being able to go full time rugby. So it's kind of a time that you're off club as well. So the way it's worked, you kind of get to totally immerse yourself within the provincial system for the summer and kind of, just play. I suppose I think I probably already played nearly some of my best rugby with Leinster over the years, luckily. Just the brand that we play, and I said Tanya Rosser being instrumental in that, and coaches we've had over the years is playing in that Leinster way of rugby, the style similar to the style that the men play, in terms of that just flowing rugby that everybody can play in the different positions, and just being able to, you know, play that expansive rugby. It's exciting to play. It's kind of, it was a nice way to end it. As I said, prefer to be on the pitch, but the girls did a blinder on the day to get the job done up in Belfast. So yeah, I was happy out.
And you, like you said earlier on, obviously part of the decision for retirement was you could see the amount of time the other girls were getting, you know, the people who were on the contracts and were training day in, day out. I know a couple of years ago, obviously you decided not to take up a contract because you have your day job teaching and you're kind of focusing on that. But when you were on the few times a year then, when you were coming in and out of the camps to be involved, could you see the development that was going on? Like, could you see a jump in a player from maybe a couple of months apart that they were getting because of what they were getting day to day?
Yeah, probably more so over the last year or so, because the numbers within the centralized program have grown. It's a good complaint. Like, obviously, you'd like for myself to be on the other side of it, but it just wasn't. You said it wasn't conducive at the time for a lot of us who were, you know, offered the contracts at the time. But it's a growing thing and it's changing all the time, and it has gotten better and improved over time. And the group that they have in there of the girls along with the coaching staff is a perfect blend. And yeah, you would see a jump definitely in the improvement in players, just in terms of, it's probably, and the girls all say it as well, it's that ability to recover probably more than anything, is to be able to go back to back sessions and do your pitch session, do your gym, and then get your recovery in, rather than having to worry about kind of getting work done or going back to work. So probably from that point of view, yeah, you probably feel more recovered as an athlete, more than your kind of your rugby abilities per se have jumped. But yeah, there's definitely improvements, and the group there's a core group of them there, been together, you're in together kind of day in and day out, definitely helps in terms of making a more of a cohesive picture to it. So it's a good complaint, and it's not something that I would begrudge at all. you know, it's the way you want to see it go, and you want to see the same opportunities afforded to the women as the men have. So it's definitely going in that right direction. So it's brilliant for the game.
And this was a question I asked. We were out doing media ahead of the Australia game a couple of weeks ago, and it's something I asked Dervla Nikvord about how excited are you about what is to come with Irish women's rugby, given what we've seen now in the last 12 months and the jumps that have been made and the younger players coming through, and also how much is there a little, just the tiniest little hint of jealousy, God, if only that was there when I was 22, 23 years old, the opportunity to be a professional coming out of college or something like that.
Oh, it's crazy. Like, as you look at it, like you said, I started playing when I was 24 in the Leinster Division 2 League, which at the time, you know, and I wouldn't even sniff at it now, but like, you look at the girls coming in now that are there, you know, the likes of the Ruth Campbell, like Jay Neal, who played with us and captained the group, like they play that under-20s tournament. They get to play a whole under-20s tournament and get exposure against England, against France, against Italy, against the other nations that like you don't even dream of playing when we were starting off rugby. So yeah, just the exposure that that gives them to like that test match rugby and that international feel for rugby, that when they come up the ranks, it's not as overawing to them. It's not as daunting. They're playing against their same age level the way up, but at a way higher level and a way higher spec of rugby, and the coaching that they're being exposed to is way higher. And the environment just of that professionalism and what it takes to be a kind of an elite athlete, it's just years apart. So yeah, of course, it's like, you're like, God, I'd love to have that when we were growing up and when we were getting started in the sport. But like, it just shows you how far it's come, even over the last, as I said, 3 years as such is huge compared to the way it was probably even when the contracts first came in, even the jumps that have been taken to put the pathways in place. It's getting there and it's clicking and you see the benefits of it. But yeah, you definitely would have loved it when we were growing up and starting off to be able to take those stepping stones and get that experience at that level as well. But look.
Absolutely. And like, it's something I've really noticed working in the last couple of years, where when there's new caps coming in and we're at press conferences and we're asking people about their own backgrounds in rugby and how they got involved, more and more we're hearing the players say, oh, I started when I was 8, 9, 10 years of age, down as whatever, and you were playing in kind of mixed gender rugby, and then they went off to a different club for the all girls section, and you know, in their early teens or something. But obviously, you're one of the few of this generation. Like, there are fewer cases.
Vintage, yeah. Remember,
you know, in the mid teens when I was starting out in journalism, and most of the players you'd speak to were like yourself, where I started playing rugby in late teens or early 20s.
That's it, though. Like, you literally would have had. You didn't, like, I think a lot of the girls probably from around my era or my vintage, like, your exposure to rugby was probably seeing the women's team play in Ashburn, like, and, you know, win Six Nations, winning Grand Slams and beating New Zealand in a semi-final. Like, it was, that was your exposure. Like, God, like, there is a women's team. Like, that's the height of what you had. And I know it's said over and over again, but you get so jealous hearing these girls, like, you know, like the height of Aoife Dalton, you know, Dana O'Brien, you know, all these players coming up and saying that they're playing, you know, oh, I played with, as you said, like my minis rugby with X, Y, and Z, and I've been playing since I was, you know, 8, or like the pictures even of Leinster put out of Ruth Campbell, like playing with, I don't know what team she's playing with, an ace, I think. And like the minis rugby, like it's just unheard of for our age group. So for them to come up through the ranks and be exposed to rugby, almost like we are for Gaelic games, of kind of, that's what everybody is associated with now. Rugby is kind of becoming that everybody is playing it from that young age, and it's becoming more the norm. So it can only mean growth and development down the line. And it is starting to pay off as you see those young girls coming through and earning their first caps there, even as lately as the Australia game as well, which is brilliant.
Moving on to the WXV then, and the current team, and what we're to expect over the next few weeks. Obviously, the good Six Nations campaign, World Cup qualification for next year. And also then it was the qualification, the jump from WXV to WXV1. And you know, you go from, Ireland will be going from playing Kazakhstan and Colombia and then Spain to New Zealand, Canada and USA. And it is a huge jump. What do you think this Ireland team can look to get out of these next few weeks? Because I think, realistically, I think a lot of people would probably look at Ireland against New Zealand this weekend and say, you know, a win realistically is probably beyond what Ireland can hope for. But what can they get out of it? Because I think we saw in the Six Nations with the games against France and England where obviously results didn't go to plan, but they were able to recover and use those towards building performances over the course of that tournament.
That's the thing, like, the momentum is there from, you know, the backs of good performances, whereas our England performance, we weren't happy with, to bounce back the next week like the girls did against Scotland and get the win and get the qualification is brilliant. And like the same with the Australia game, it's, you know, momentum and it's little things they picked up from that. For me, looking at it, even to look at how the lineup and things have changed, they've obviously got the new coaches in there. In terms of, I think it's Alex Codling as well who's come in as the forwards coach, and obviously Dennis Fogarty is still in there for scrums, but Hugh Hogan is in there as defence. The jigsaw pieces that they're putting together, they'll be looking, I think, they won't be overawed by the fact that they're in WXV1 at all. There won't be the fear. There's no fear. It's like they said, no Irish team has ever feared being the underdog, and the girls certainly will be feeling that as well. So they'll relish the opportunity. It's like, it's not every day you get the opportunity to play against the likes of New Zealand, to play the likes of Canada and the USA. I know in my time playing in my caps, I think most of them have obviously come during Six Nations, and then obviously Japan a couple of times, as well as the USA. But like, to get the girls these exposure playing these world-class teams, you got to mix it with them to be able to realize where the gaps are and where you need to improve. So yeah, I think they'll be realistic about the areas that they want to go at and target. They'll probably have looked at Canada recently in the year, who gave them a good run for their money and actually managed to beat them in the Pacific Four series earlier in the year. So I'd say they'll definitely be looking at that match and seeing what did Canada do that we can do. I think definitely areas of defence, they'll be looking for a big performance in defence and standing up, getting their systems right. You could see it as well, even from myself being involved in it in the Six Nations with them. It was definitely a similar structure in terms of, but everybody seemed to know their role and that defensive structure that's there, and that soundness in defence is to be as comfortable in defence as we are in attack. So the girls definitely will be looking to add to that, seeing where they did it against Australia, but bringing it then another 10% then as it comes to playing against the likes of New Zealand. So I think they'll look at that, and then I suppose in terms of attack, they'll look at to be clinical. Set piece, they'll hope that they'll, you know, be able to put it up them in terms of scrum and in terms of the line out. But just being clinical then in the chances that they do get, if they're few and far between, that they're able to take them and they're able to put it up to them and they're able to hold New Zealand out for as much of the game as possible, and to make those small wins, looking at all those different areas of the game that they can pick little wins on. And they've got good experiences, you know, Emer Constantine coming back a fullback is huge, and the experience that she brings in the backfield. And obviously with Lauren Delaney retiring, to have someone like Emer's caliber come back into it has been brilliant to see her get back involved in it. And also the core to the sevens gang who've come back as well, add, you know, great speed, great power as well across the park from the backs to the forwards. So yeah, it's a good blend there. So yeah, the small wins, but a big defensive performance, I think, will be what they'll be looking against New Zealand to tick off.
And is what happens over the next 3 weeks, is ultimately, are we not really going to be judging it until we get round to the Six Nations and see how they've taken whatever lessons they've learned from these few weeks and built on from it? Because I think one thing that Scott and a couple of the players mentioned a few weeks ago was the example of Wales, where they took the step up into WXV1 last year, mm-hmm. and results didn't go their way, and it did, that kind of form seemed to carry on into the Six Nations and just kind of stall their growth a little bit. Is the important thing about this to use this as a springboard for the next 12 months?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's a springboard, but as well as like giving you, I suppose, a realistic look at where you are and where are the areas you can improve. Like the girls, as I said, they won't be overawed. They definitely won't be going into the match without thinking that they can win it. Like as you know, as up to it as they may be in terms of the caliber that they're against. You can't go into any rugby match and think that you can't win it, because if you do, what's the point? So they'll be looking at that. Like, as I said, that Canada match, they've obviously lost to England there most recently there a couple of weekends ago. But yeah, it's, I suppose, it's the girls to take what they can out of it. Not, I suppose, to let it affect them, I suppose, one way or the other, no matter what way it goes. As you said, like, it's work on. It's building towards next year. Everything is building towards next year. To be in WXV1 is a massive bonus for the girls. You know, as you said, to jump from WXV3 all the way up to 1 is a bonus, and probably one that wasn't expected by a lot of people. But to make that jump, it's got to make the most of it now. You're playing against the best. Test yourself against the best. See where you're at. See where you come out. But see where you can fare after that then, what you can take from it, how you can build from it and go from there. As I said, yeah, looking into the Six Nations then, I suppose next year would be a big part of it. But yeah, they won't be overwhelmed by the challenge of it. I think it's probably nice to start with New Zealand straight off the bat, see where you're at. A good crunch of a test to start going into it. But yeah, looking forward to seeing how they fare against them.
And then, like, also as well, part of it as well is, in 12 months' time, there is going to be a World Cup, and you could have a New Zealand or you could have a Canada in a pool. And wouldn't it be nice to go into a game like that in 12 months, not experiencing it for the first time, which the vast, vast majority of the squad will not have played Canada. And I'm pretty sure all of them wouldn't have played, or I think all but two of them played New Zealand as well.
Yeah, exactly. There's a big, like, as you said, that in itself will stand them in huge stead. Like, going forward into next year and having a different caliber, as I said, like even in my time playing, you're generally speaking, we've obviously increased it in having tours to like to Japan and having test matches in November. But to have the likes of Australia come to our shores, to be able to go over now and play these different oppositions, it gives you different pictures. It's a different style of rugby. It's a different, you know, same game, but different opposition. And yeah, it's all building towards the World Cup. There's no doubt about that. The girls will very much have, I'm sure they'll have their goals and their KPIs set out for what they want from these three games. They won't look past the New Zealand game this week, but they will have certain goals that they will be, are their non-negotiables of what they will put up. But yeah, it will ultimately all build, I imagine, towards down the line, a year down the line, when they're having a World Cup to play for.
On New Zealand more specifically then, like what would they be showing that Ireland wouldn't be seeing week on week in a Six Nations against teams they're more familiar with?
Yeah, I suppose it's that kind of, it's the Southern Hemisphere style of rugby you'd see with the men. It's very similar with their women. It's that the backs will live off chaos. They will live off the, they have so much experience mixed there. I think they managed, such was their experience, and they're kind of blending over the last few games, I suppose, building up to WXB1s here, blending that mix of youth and experience in their backs. Like they have, it's just that, I suppose, it's the same way you'd see their men do. It's like they will live in the chaos and they'll probably benefit off it. So any loose kicks, any scraps, any knock-ons, they will just play it. Like they didn't obviously fare too well against England, but the tries that they scored were pure, you know, pure pace, pure off the cuff rugby, some of it. So that's what they'll bring. But as well as that, they bring a serious punch. Like they're probably similar to what the girls will play in terms of England, in terms of the size of their props. They also have wingers that look like they could be props, such as their power. They have back rows that could be wingers. It's kind of, it's that kind of through the team. It's just kind of the caliber to the team that they have is pretty intense. So yeah, I suppose it's probably more that the power game that we wouldn't probably see as much, bar England and maybe France. You probably wouldn't see it as much that they have, but that's, I suppose, the biggest challenge to the girls.
So it's New Zealand up first. That's I believe it's 3 a.m. kickoff Irish time, a Sunday leading into Monday morning. So 3 a.m. kickoff Irish time Monday morning. Then the following weekend is Canada and then USA. Yeah. On the USA one, so USA are a more familiar opponent to Ireland. Yeah. Just down the last few years, 2022, November, Ireland would have beaten them 2010 at the RDS. How far further down the line are the USA since then? Is that a realistic, winnable opportunity for Ireland in this campaign?
I think so. Like, I definitely think that they will be probably looking at that game. And I suppose it depends how Canada fare in their first game as well, because, you know, they obviously were, that was the first time they beat New Zealand back in May when they played in that Pacific Four. So yeah, like definitely those two games are two that I suppose anything could happen. But USA particularly, yeah, USA have been kind of hit and miss over the last few years. Their results kind of flow, ebb and flow. So again, it depends, I suppose, how the earlier stages of the tournament go for both of those teams and how it goes for the girls to see how they fare. But no more than that, they'll be definitely looking to get certain things out of that New Zealand game. They will fancy themselves. As I said, the girls' tails will be, you know, up because of the results, but they will be realistic about what they can achieve from it. But as I said, they're not going to be going into the game thinking that they can do anything but win, because there's no point in a rugby game trying to do that. So you're already lost if you go in with that attitude. But yeah, I'm interested to see how it goes, especially over the coming weeks, as you said, how they fare against the other opposition as well.
Right, well, that one's a couple of weeks away. So Ireland, New Zealand in Vancouver, 3 a.m. kickoff Irish time on Monday morning. So set your watches for it, set your recorder, whatever, you get up on Monday morning and watch it as well. Maybe stay up if you're watching a bit of NFL as well on a Sunday night. But listen, Hannah, thanks a million for joining us, and hopefully we'll speak to you again soon. I'll leave you go because I know you've got training coming up soon. Big game for Blackrock this weekend. UL Bows.
Yeah, big game. UL Bows at home. Yeah, so we'll kick off the season against the reigning champs, hopefully to kick off the way we mean to go on. So yeah, it'll be a good one. No doubt a nice crunch one to kick us off. So looking forward to it.
Absolutely. Hannah, thanks a million for joining us.
Cheers. Thanks a million, Neil.